Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome back. We are at day 98. We've got Exodus chapters 5, 6, 7, and 8 today. If you haven't done the reading, go do the reading. I promise everything that I've got to say will be way more helpful, add way more value if you've already done the reading. I'm so proud that you're on this journey with us and that you trust me to help you understand the Bible for yourself. Exodus chapters 5, 6, 7, and 8. Let's get into some context clues. First context clue, we always kind of like to start as far up as 30,000 feet as possible. I kind of want to give you a breakdown of the whole book just so that you can kind of orient yourself. I want you to just think threes, okay? Exodus happens in a sequence of three. And there's like this climax at each sequence that gives us our major theme, okay? So Exodus actually literally has three themes with three sections and three culminating moments, okay? So first one, Exodus moves from absence to presence. So one of the things that you'll notice in the first chapter is that God's name is not in the first chapter, okay, of Exodus. And it appears, okay, from the character's perspective that God's absent. We know that God is not absent, but on a literary level, the writers are trying to communicate God's absence. And then what you're going to get at the very end of the book is God's presence comes down and he fills the tabernacle. Okay, that's the culminating moment of presence that is really the focus of the last third of the book, because the last third of the book is all about the construction of the tabernacle. So the climax of the book is not getting freed from Egypt. Okay, once they get freed from Egypt in chapters 14 and 15, there's still 25 or so chapters of Exodus, okay? And a lot of people, like if you ever watch like an Exodus movie, like that's where the movie stops, okay? As if the crossing of the Red Sea is the climax of the whole book, but it's not. It's actually just the climax of the first section of the book. So the third section is the building of the tabernacle, which the culminating moment is the presence of God actually dwelling amongst the people. And the big theme that that highlights is that the book goes from absence to presence. Okay. Theme number two is actually what we're going to get in the first third of the book, is that God does not save us from slavery to freedom, but actually saves us from slavery to slavery. I know that's counterintuitive for a lot of people. And part of that is just because we conflate the words freedom with independence. So there's this really, really cool detail that the word in Hebrew for slave, serve, obey, and worship, that these are actually the exact same word. Obviously, they get translated differently based on the context. But if you actually know that, as you're reading in an English translation, you can see that Pharaoh wants the people to serve him, and God wants the people to serve him. And who you serve is who you worship. And who you worship is who you are enslaved to. And so the goal is not for the people to be free from Pharaoh and then free to do whatever they want. No, it's to be free from Pharaoh and then free to enslave themselves to Yahweh, serve Yahweh, worship Yahweh. So the book doesn't move from slavery to independence, but it moves from slavery to true freedom. Which is what? Deciding I'm going to be a bond slave, I'm going to be a bond servant to Yahweh. We'll deal with that more. So the culminating moment of that is the crossing of the Red Sea, where they don't just go from being slaves to just being free and doing whatever they want. That's how we define freedom. But to being going from slaves to Pharaoh to now being slaves of God and saying, I have not been set free to do whatever I want to do. I've been set free so that I can obey the one who has set me free. Third big theme And it really, that theme finds its culmination in the center of the book, which is covenant. Covenant. If you think about Genesis, one of the big themes for Genesis is covenant. God makes a covenant with Noah. God makes a covenant with Abraham. And it is that covenant promise that keeps getting remembered and reiterated in every successive generation. But God's not made a covenant with the nation of Israel. In Exodus 19, we are going to get a covenant with the nation of Israel. It's actually going to be a wedding ceremony out in the wilderness. So the beginning of the book, the big theme is that God is moving them from slavery to slavery. They're just switching slave masters. And honestly, that's a timeless truth. I know we haven't gotten into nerdy nuggets yet. I'll give you a timeless truth early, is that the Christian journey is a switching of slave masters. Then you go, I'm not going to be a slave to sin. Sin is not a good slave master. God, though, is a fantastic slave master. Okay. And I'm going to be a slave to the Lord. I'm actually going to be a servant of God. I'm going to worship God. I'm going to obey God. I'm not free to do whatever I want to do. I'm actually free, not to, but I'm free from. I'm not free to smoke. I'm not free to drink. I'm not free to cheat. I'm free from drinking. I'm free from smoking. I'm free from cheating. The Christian celebrates what we are free from doing, not what we are free to do. And since sin is a terrible slave master, terrible leader, terrible owner, we've actually just swapped out the slave master. And we said, God, I trust you with my life. I'll surrender my will to you. I'll be a bond slave to you. Okay, because you're trustworthy and you love me. Family, the wait is over. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, is out now and available everywhere books are sold. Literally today, I walked into a Barnes & Noble and I signed a bunch of copies at a physical location. So you can grab this book at a physical Barnes & Noble, or you can go to a Books A Million or Amazon or anywhere books are sold and grab a copy. If you enjoy reading the Bible from an ancient perspective, if you understand that the beauty of Scripture is actually knowing it in context, then you'll love this book. And if there's any chaos in your personal life, I think that reading the Bible from an ancient perspective can actually help to crush the chaos in your life. I think this book is going to be a New York Times bestseller. I really do. I think we wrote a good one. I think you should get a copy today. All right, back to the episode. All right. Let's get into some nerdy nuggets, okay? In this section, we're going to finally see officially the plagues are going to start. And we're going to kind of get, there's some stuff that kind of leads up to this moment where the plagues really do start. And part of what leads up to this is Pharaoh's ridiculous statement in Exodus chapter 5, verse 2. Here's the nerdy nugget that a lot of us may not know. Is that in the Egyptian pantheon of gods, Pharaoh would have been a god. So God does not engage Pharaoh as if he's a man. God does not engage Pharaoh as if he's a mere mortal. God actually engages Pharaoh as if he is a deity. Now, here's the biggest clue to this, is that the Pharaoh that is actually going to get judged for drowning the babies in the Red Sea is not even the Pharaoh that drowns the babies in the Red Sea. They're not even the same person. Because for God, he doesn't even want the Pharaoh to be named, because he's not judging the individual human being. He's judging the office of the Pharaoh. He's judging every Pharaoh that's ever existed, because every single Pharaoh that's ever existed occupies an office that is in arrogant rebellion and idolatry. So the office of the Pharaoh was an office that was considered to be a semi-divine or quasi-divine or semi-divine, a demigod. Okay. The Pharaoh would have been considered to be a demigod. Okay. And so God does not engage normal humans the way that he is going to engage Pharaoh. Okay. God engages political leaders who oppress entire ethnic groups and believe that they are gods this way, which is none of us. That's none of us. Okay. So this is not how God engages the average Joe down the street. This is how God engages a political ruler whose nation upholds him to be a god and who receives worship as a divine being. Okay. So Exodus chapter 5, verse 2, we're going to figure out the motivation behind the plagues, a word that gets used a lot in geopolitical, you know, in our globalized world is, you know, is a escalation. You know, the conflict is escalating. So what we see in these chapters is an escalation of conflict. Moses goes to Pharaoh. It's like, hey, man, time's up. Let's let the people go. And of course, Pharaoh is not going to rock with that. Okay, so here we go. Exodus chapter 5, verse 2. It says, here's Pharaoh's response, okay, to Moses, who's speaking for Yahweh, is this. Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. So we've got a question followed by a statement. Who is the Lord? Who is this? Who is this Yahweh you speak of? I've never heard of him. Remember, in the ancient world, all gods have names. Okay. So who is this Yahweh? Who is this Lord that you tell me about? I don't know. I don't. And who is he that I should obey him? Like, you see how knowledge and obedience are going together. Knowledge and submission are linked here. And then he goes from asking a question to making a statement. I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. Okay. This is now how God is going to respond. And it's going to take me a while to kind of like read all these. Okay. So I want you to just bear with me. So this is Pharaoh says, I'm not going to let Israel go because I don't know Yahweh. God's about to give the most gangster response in the entire Bible. Okay. So this is God's version of mess around and find out. Okay. That's what God's about to do. Exodus 7 verse 17. Thus says the Lord, by this you shall know that I'm the Lord. Behold, with a staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile and it shall turn to blood. So first plague, why does the plague happen? So that Pharaoh will know who is God. Next, Exodus chapter 8, verse 10. Be it as you say, so that you may know that there is no one like the Lord your God. And this is the removal or the stopping of the plague of frogs. Okay. Exodus 8, 21. This is the swarm of flies. But on that day, I will set apart the land of Goshen where my people dwell, so that no swarm of flies shall be there, that you may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the earth. Okay. Exodus 9:14. For this time, I will send all my plagues on you yourself and on your servants, on your people, so that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. This is the plague of hail. By the way, the plague of hail is God, okay, combating a polytheistic world. So if you think about hail actually requires two elements to cooperate. And in a polytheistic world, right, the water god doesn't cooperate with the air god. It doesn't cooperate with the sun god. These gods don't cooperate. And the description for hail that we get here is that there's like fire in the hail, okay? It's like, it's a hailstorm that's like full of fire, which would have been insane for Egyptians because they live in a polytheistic world, which would have meant God doesn't operate in a polytheistic system where like where a chip is made in Taiwan and like the, you know, if you think about your iPhone or your iPad or any of your Apple devices, you know, these things are made from all different factories all over the world. God is like, yeah, I control everything. Okay. I there's no distribution chain. There's no supply chain with me. I make everything. So the hail, well, the plague of hail would have definitely communicated, oh, got it. We're messing with a God that I've never seen. Exodus 10:2, Exodus 11:7, Exodus 14:4, Exodus 14:18. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. Okay, so the theme over and over and over again is, oh, Pharaoh said he don't know who I am. Okay, cool. I can gladly introduce Pharaoh to who I am, and I will do that with plagues. Now, why plagues? The plagues are an act of decreation. So in all of the plagues, God, Yahweh, is unraveling the order of his creation. So creation in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2 is originally chaotic. It's tohu vavohu. What happened in the flood is that creation just goes right back to its chaotic tohu vavohu. What happens here in the plagues is that every single thing that God established in creation gets unraveled, gets unestablished. And here's the, I wrote it down in my notebook so I could say it the exact right way. Here's what God is saying to Pharaoh. He's like, Pharaoh, since you are a God, go ahead and sustain your creation. Since you're a God, stop me. Stop me from unraveling the order of your nation. Go ahead. Since you're a God, you're the God of Egypt, which means I should only have power over in Goshen. Because remember, in a polytheistic world, they believed in localized deities. Okay, so Baal only has power in Canaan, and Ra only has power in Egypt, and Marduk only has power in Babylon, and all the gods only have their regional gods. And so what God is saying is, wait, you're a God, right? You're a God. Okay, cool. We'll talk man to man. We'll talk God to God. We could, you don't know me? Okay, cool. How about this? You're a God. I heard you're a God. So the job of the deity is to uphold the order of their worshipers. So everyone here in Egypt worships you because you sustain the order and the fabric of life. So, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and pull on this thread here and unravel the Nile. I'm just going to pull on the thread and just unravel this stuff. If you're a God, you should be able to stop me. It should be no big deal. And Pharaoh's clearly powerless to stop Yahweh, which proves to Pharaoh, you are not a God, sir. You are mere mortal. You who receive worship, you who call yourself a God, you who prop yourself up like a deity, you who have allowed some demonic power to convince you that you are more powerful than you are. All power belongs to me. I am God. I am Yahweh. And I will unravel. It's more decreation than active plaguing. It's okay, cool. I'm just going to unravel the fabric of your creation. And then our timeless truth, as we kind of wind down, is back to full circle, is we don't go, there's a battle of Pharaoh and God. When we move from being slaves of sin or slaves of Pharaoh to actually being a slave of God, he is a God who is deserving of that servitude. Okay, so we're actually going to compare Exodus chapter 2, verse 23 to 25 with Exodus chapter 3, verse 7 to 9. Exodus chapter 2, verse 23 to 25 says this: during those many days, the king of Egypt died, and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. Okay, go down to Exodus 3, verse 7 to 9. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. Keep dropping down. The cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen their oppression. So you hear God's compassion, his love. I hear them. I hear their cry. I remember them. I see them. I know them. Let's compare that with Pharaoh. Exodus chapter 5, verse 8 says this: but the number of bricks that they made in the past, you shall impose on them. You shall by no means reduce it, for they are idle. They're lazy. Therefore, they cry. let us go and offer sacrifices to our God. You see how Pharaoh hears their cry? He's annoyed by it. Chapter 5, verse 15. Then the foreman of the people of Israel came and cried to Pharaoh, "Why do you treat your servants like this?" And what does Pharaoh say? In verse 18, "Go now and work. No straw will be given you. You must still deliver the same number of bricks." See, their cry doesn't mean anything. And that's how you know that you have a terrible slave master, when your cry means nothing. God says, "I've earned the right for you to serve me, submit to me, obey me. I've earned the right to own you. I've earned that right because I love you. Like, your cry moves me. I care deeply for you. Sin doesn't care about you. The devil doesn't care about you. Sin doesn't love you. Like, that, this is point blank, period. This abusive boyfriend, and you're like, he doesn't love you. I love you. Why would you serve something that doesn't love you, but then complain about serving the God who actually loves you?" So the action's not different. The person's different. The action is still serve, submit, obey, be enslaved to. That's the action. We have a negative connotation based on that action because we've been enslaved to terrible people who don't care when we cry. But when we cry out to God, God says, "Oh, your cry moves me. Oh, I feel compassion when you cry out to me." And because that's how I feel, that's actually the thing that's earned me the right to be the Lord of your life. Okay, we're a little long today. Tomorrow, we got day 99. We're going to keep our trek through Exodus. We're going to get into the plagues. I think it's going to be really, really helpful. If you're on a streak, keep it going. If you're not, today's a good day to start a streak. Just get 2 days in and then just keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. I love you. I'm proud of you. Till tomorrow, I'll see you right here. Till tomorrow. Peace. Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com? I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.